Try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait. Will this send me spiraling out of my routine?
Time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again?
Fruit ruins
Never
insulin
Never eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Cut carbs by 30%.
Fast for 48 hours.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear. Just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Mona Charon Show. I am delighted to welcome today my colleague, Jonathan Cohn, from The Bulwark, who writes deep dives about policy. If there's a topic that you want to understand better, really, you cannot find a better guide than Jonathan. And I'm particularly delighted to have him here today because we just saw a fairly dramatic hearing on Capitol Hill where RFK Jr. was testifying, and it got pretty spicy. And Jonathan saw the whole thing. I only saw part of it, but today we're going to talk about health. We're going to talk about the attack of the MAHA forces and how to understand all of this. So, Jonathan, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I am so excited to be on the show with you, to be your colleague, and I wish we had better things to talk about.
I know. Agreed. But, you know, I don't know how you feel about it. There's such a comprehensive assault on American democracy that we're living through. But I think the RFK Jr. Stuff is among the worst because it's so personal. I feel, personally endangered by the decisions that he is making. Before we get to the fireworks at the hearing today, let's just give people an overview of what he has done. He came in promising, in response to Senator Cassidy and others, that he would not launch an assault on vaccines, which has been his life's work, trying to discredit and make money off of suing vaccine manufacturers. He's a big anti-vax activist. Promised he wasn't going to do that. What has he done since getting into office?
Yeah, he has done everything he promised not to do, I think is a fair statement. And it's sort of been a series of steps, one building on the other. He has, first of all, he is, I think, you know, working directly on vaccines. He has, there's a committee, that advises the Centers for Disease Control, which makes recommendations, for what vaccines to use. He, fired everybody on that committee.
Now, these are not necessarily, employees of CDC, right? These are outside experts who know the field. Yeah. Explain.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an outside committee with up to 17 members. They serve rotating, staggered terms. You know, typically a new president would come in, appoint a new HHS secretary who would then appoint, you know, new members to fill the old roles. And sometimes people come out and leave, and sometimes people are, you know, there's politics like there is in anything else sometimes. But in general, the turnover is gradual. And as you say, these are outside well-respected scientists. They're not paid. It's a volunteer job. Very prestigious, though, because, you know, it's a big responsibility. These are people, their job is to go through all the available evidence, make recommendations that are typically followed by the CDC director and then signed off on by the Secretary of HHS. We've never seen somebody just come in and wipe out the whole committee and say, you're all gone. I don't want any of you here. Goodbye. Thank you for your service, which is what he's done. He has now brought in his own people, many of whom have well-documented records of being vaccine critics, vaccine skeptics. Some have, you know, fairly mainstream scientific credentials. Some do not. But, you know, it's a very clear attempt to change this committee, to tilt it in the direction of a position against vaccination, which is wildly out of the mainstream. I mean, this is just, you know, the vast majority of physicians and scientists, even to the extent they might disagree among themselves over this or that question, would say, no, this is not what any of us think. So he's done that. He has used his own influence to change specific vaccine recommendations, specifically when it comes to COVID boosters, who gets them, so that now they're not going to be recommended for healthy children or for pregnant women. The not recommending COVID boosters for pregnant women in particular, COVID shots for pregnant women in particular, is something that I think has gotten a lot of people's attention, because we know that pregnancy is a high-risk condition. It can cause real problems, both for the mother, for the newborn after they're born, to not have gotten that shot. So this is a big deal.
And what happens, Jonathan, what happens when the Secretary of HHS changes the recommendations for vaccines? What is the real-world impact of that?
So there are a number of real-world impacts. The first one has to do with what insurance companies will cover. There's, you know, because in part because of the laws of the Affordable Care Act, insurance companies have to cover recommended vaccines. Well, if the vaccines aren't recommended, insurance companies don't have to cover them. In addition, certain providers of vaccines will use that list to determine whether or not they'll administer vaccines for certain people. And we're already, the example you'll hear a lot about, because it's been in the news lately, is pharmacies. You know, you and I both remember a time when you only got vaccines typically at your doctor's office, or there'd be like a clinic or something. But nowadays, so many people, I actually think it's a majority. I don't want to say that for sure, because I want to make sure I'm right about that. But I think the majority of Americans now do get vaccines through pharmacies, you know, sometimes right in your grocery store.
And it's just so easy. You walk in.
So easy. You get your flu shot. You go get
your bananas. The baked beans, get the milk.
It's great. It's perfect. They're like, they don't want you to go out of the store for 15 minutes. Perfect. I'll do my shopping.
Right.
You know, two birds with one stone. Well, in a lot of states, the laws are not clear about what, you know, because states have different laws about what pharmacies can and can't do. And that gets, there's a whole other issue of what, you know, that has to do with state laws and various deals with doctors and such. But mm-hmm. in a lot of states now, the big pharmacy chains, CVS, Walgreens, are looking carefully, and some have already started to withhold and say, we're not going to give out vaccines to just anybody because we're not sure we're authorized to do it. So that's you know, a big problem. And in fact, this came up in the hearing today. We've seen a number of, notably some conservative writers, I think, you know, not just liberal writers, saying, wait a minute, need to get the vaccine. It's hard to get now. You know, you have to go through all these hoops and et cetera to get them. So that's, you know, that
and
is
there's an something issue about you have to ask your doctor to prescribe it off label. Can you explain that?
Sure. So the way it works in the United States is if the FDA has authorized a vaccine for use, it'll say this is, you know, the patient population it's for, this is the condition it's for. And in those cases, if you fall into the categories, and the pharmacies, for example, would recognize that and say, okay, you're over 65, therefore you can get the vaccine. That's fine. If it's not recommended for your group, so let's say you're a 52-year-old, otherwise healthy person who doesn't have a, quote, high-risk category, if you want the COVID booster, you have to have a doctor, you know, recommend it to you. It is not specifically is on, since the CDC is now not recommending it, since the FDA is not recommending it, the doctor would have to write a prescription, which they can do. Doctors can always prescribe things for other uses, and it happens all the time. That's called an off-label, because it refers to the label. You know, it's a reference to the label that the FDA has put on the drug. But, you know, it's hard to get that. You know, not all doctors will do it. You have to find a doctor. And you can just think through in
your
head.
What about people that don't have a doctor? Yeah.
You don't have a doctor. You don't have a relationship with a doctor. You don't have health insurance. I mean, you just start to go down the list.
Yeah.
And you know, Kennedy has this line, which he repeated today in the hearing. He's like, I am not taking vaccines away from anybody. Anybody can get a vaccine. And there's a, you know, that's sort of kind of true technically. But the reality is whether you can get a vaccine isn't simply a matter of whether there is a, you know, if you have to go through five different steps to get the vaccine. And, you know, one of those is knowing a doctor. One of them is having the money for it, et cetera. A lot of people functionally will not be able to get the vaccine. And exactly. So in a very real sense, he's taking it away from people.
Yep. Okay. So in addition to that, there are other actions that he has taken.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want to talk about defunding research on mRNA vaccines? It's a big one.
I do. Okay. I do. I actually think this is the one of all the things that he's done, it's the one that I find the most baffling and the one that I think in the long term could be most damaging. Mm-hmm. Maybe. It's hard to be sure. Yeah. Just quick background for everybody. Yeah. mRNA is a naturally occurring part of your genetic material in your cells. It's the way the blue, simple way to think of it is it's how you go from genetic blueprint to the proteins that your cells produce that you use to function, et cetera. Norm, you know, in the past, traditionally, when you think of a vaccine, what was it? Well, typically it was a version of the germ that was like deactivated, like the original polio vaccine, right? It couldn't infect you, although occasionally it did. But, you know, in general, it was like, we're giving you the germ, your body reacts to it, and then it you have immunity afterwards.
There's and other in the kinds bad of, old days, they used to give people actually live vaccines, right? In the 18th century.
Yeah.
And some people would get it and die, but yes, most didn't. Yes. So it was still worth doing, they thought.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it's a reminder that the reason we have these vaccines is that if you don't have the vaccines and you get the disease, really bad things happen. Even if you don't die, bad things happen. So, I mean, that's why people historically have been very excited to have vaccines.
Yep.
Over time, you know, we developed different ways to deliver vaccines. At some point, in the last 20, 30 years, there was more and more interest. Could we use mRNA somehow could we deliver special mRNA? Could we deliver this sort of genetic blueprint into your cells so that your cells will manufacture a piece of the germ that you're trying to fight off? And then your body will learn to fight it in the future. And it's a complex, you know, you have to go through several steps to get the genetic material into your cells, and took decades to figure out how to do this. But, you know, fortunately we did develop it and just in time for COVID. And because we had that technology available for COVID, that is the reason scientifically we were able to develop a vaccine as quickly as we did.
Could I interrupt real quick just to do a short little commercial for immigration?
Because yes, please.
Because the woman scientist who was instrumental in coming up with mRNA technology, I think her name was Karikos. She won the Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine for this work. She was an immigrant to the United States who came with nothing except her brilliance, and she did this. Anyway, end of commercial.
I would spend the whole show talking just about the scientific contributions of immigrants. And, I mean, there's a whole other story of how we are losing that in the way we're changing. Exactly. I mean, yeah, come back to that conversation at some point, because I think that is also incredibly destructive to our future.
Yeah.
But the mRNA, you know, we got the vaccine very quickly. And I feel like this has been memory hold, or maybe just the politics and the story. You know, so many people we've gotten, I think, so caught up in, and not just, you know, among, you know, certain parts of the political, I think all of us to some extent have gotten caught up to what we got wrong in the COVID response. We got a lot wrong in the COVID response. I don't think anybody looking back would deny that. I think close the schools too, you know, early. I mean, all this stuff was, you know, it was complicated. We definitely made some mistakes. Hopefully we learned from the mistakes. We also got a lot right. And those vaccines got a lot right. And we saved a ton of lives. And, you know, we did lose more than 1 million Americans died from COVID. I feel like people forget that. It's a lot of people. I live in Michigan, you know, right here outside Detroit. It was horrible. I mean, every day the headlines. So mRNA technology prevented that from being so much worse. And the Biden administration, when it was in office, said, hey, this technology is really promising. We think, you know, we want to be prepared for the next pandemic. Let's invest in developing a kind of vaccine platform, so it's ready to go. And we can take whatever, you're never going to have a vaccine instantly ready for a new virus because it's a new virus, but we can have it almost ready. We can have the kind of template ready. We can have the early regulatory steps clear. Just, so we're really, you know, you want to, you know, think of it as a ready, you know, a ready defense system they were investing in. And this was investment in American companies doing the research of, you know, jobs, innovation. We know there's lots of really promising research that mRNA could also help with cancer treatment. And so there was chances for spillover innovation. I mean, it was really kind of a win-win. I mean, when we think of investment in innovation, good for the United States economically, good for our institutions. Yeah, and of course, better protected against a future pandemic. But, you know,
and they were specifically working on a bird flu vaccine, right?
They were specifically working on, there were different projects going on, but
okay.
You know, several of the projects, I don't know if it was several or one, but a lot of that was very specifically looking at bird flu, which is thing that really scares the infectious disease people, because it has the ability both to be very contagious, very easy to spread, and also very deadly. That's like the 1-2 punch you fear, right? That's the worst.
Yeah.
You know, we've had bird flu circulating this year. It's mostly been confined to birds, poultry. There's been a
Thank
few
God.
human cases, but for the most part, we haven't had human to human transmission, which is what you would be afraid of. But you know, that kind of virus, it mutates quickly. It's something that has been a worry for a very long time. So you know, this is you want to be ready for it. Hopefully, it doesn't happen, but you want to be ready for it if it does.
It seemed like good government 101, right?
Yeah,
let's be prepared for the next pandemic.
Good government, public-private partnership, right? I mean, you know, working with institutions, working with companies, jobs. It's jobs, right? It's investment. Yeah. Like I said, win-win. This should not be particularly partisan in my mind. There's no reason for this to be partisan. And I mean, this is so true of so many of the things we were talking about. But you know, when I think of make America great, like if I'm an American, if I want to make America great, you know, protecting us from disease, you know, building up our industry, you know, making us the center of innovation. That all makes America great. I don't, you know, you could be, you know, have 10 MAGA red hats wearing, and you should like that. There's no reason why you should not be in favor of that.
Fall always feels like a reset. Between back to school, busier routines, and shorter days, finding time to cook can be tough. That's why I love Factor. Their chef-prepped, dietitian-approved meals make it easy to stay on track and enjoy something comforting and delicious, no matter how hectic the season gets. Factor provides more variety and more meals. They have such a wide selection of options that will satisfy a million different tastes and also dietary needs. There's premium seafood like salmon and shrimp at no extra cost. Plus, enjoy even more GLP-1 friendly meals and new Mediterranean diet options that are packed with protein and good for you fats. For the first time, you can also try Asian inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more. We have had a particularly busy time with family events this year, so it's great to know you can always just pull out a Factor meal and have something ready and delicious and healthy without having to cook. That is why 97% of customers say that Factor helped them live a healthier life. Feel the difference no matter your routine. Eat smart at factormeals.com/MonaCharon50off and use code MonaCharon50off to get 50% off your first box, plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code MonaCharon50off at factormeals.com for 50 off your first box, plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. You said a minute ago that, you know, we forget that a million Americans died from this disease. You said people forget. You know who else forgot or never knew? RFK Jr., because he was asked about it at the hearing, and he couldn't answer it. It was really an amazing moment where he refused to say. And then I've got to ask you about Senator Cassidy, because I think Senator Cassidy is such a good representation of where the Republican Party, what the Republican Party does, even to good people who are trying not to be too MAGA. But so Cassidy's a doctor. He's the senator from Louisiana. He was very skeptical about RFK Jr., to put it mildly, but when he was first named, and he met with him, and he supposedly, as I was saying earlier, extracted all these promises from him about how he would conduct himself in the office, and he voted to confirm him. And of course, he's been every bit the disaster that we feared. And Cassidy now has the obligation in this hearing to say something. But he's running for re-election, and he is very concerned about how he seems to Trump. And so he framed a question that he thought would just, you know, that would be so clever, because he thought, well, this is how I'll praise Trump but criticize RFK. It's the perfect, you know, like perfect finessing of this matter. So he asks, well, tell it. You watched it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was so obvious what was going on. So he teased it up. He says, you remember Operation Warp Speed, right? Operation Warp Speed was during the end, you know, that was the project launched under President Trump to develop the vaccine quickly. An enormous success for which Donald Trump should take credit. You know, good for him. You know, I mean,
he should get the Nobel Prize, he said.
Yeah.
He should get
the
Nobel
Prize.
Yeah,
as you
prize.
Said, the actual scientist who did the work, you know, behind it did get the Nobel Prize. You know,
we can
argue whether Donald Trump deserved it, but whatever, you know, but that exactly, right? I mean, that's how the language has to be now. We have to first genuflect at Donald Trump. He deserves the Nobel Prize. And then he then says, now, you here are pulling money from mRNA vaccines, and you, Robert F. Kennedy, keep saying that they're dangerous. I mean, he's called it the deadliest vaccine ever, which is mind-boggling. And by the way, actually looks like one of the safest vaccines ever. And we have tons of data because it's given all over the world. And because all vaccines do have side effects. I mean, occasionally the bad things are going to happen, as they would with any
medical
intervention.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later. Yeah.
And it was so obvious what he's trying to do here. He's trying to sort of say, I'm with Donald Trump, you're against Donald Trump, trying to drive that wedge there.
Yeah.
I assume it's partly to insulate himself in Louisiana politics, because he's running for president. He doesn't want to be primaried out of the Republican nomination. So he has to show that he's loyal to Trump and separate Kennedy and Trump, because if voters in Louisiana, Republican voters in Louisiana, think attacking Kennedy is the equivalent of attacking Trump, then Cassidy's going to be in trouble. So he's trying to drive that wedge. I would like to think, because I have watched Cassidy over the years. He's a smart guy. He does. Mm-hmm. He's done some great stuff on hepatitis vaccines over the years, really kind of pushing a program to get them out to more people. And I think, you know, it's a terrific initiative. I hope succeeds. I would like to think this is him trying to figure out a way to get Trump to act. So this, you know, we always talk about the audience of one in these, right? You know, getting Trump's attention. Hey, over here, Donald Trump, this guy, your HHS secretary, he's attacking your legacy. You know, you want to get rid of that guy. So, you know, but it was so obvious. And it wasn't just Cassidy, right? Because we heard this from several other Republicans too.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's worth, even though I know our audience knows, but I just, Kennedy is such a liar. And so he's sincere, I think, in his nuttiness. I think he's a genuine believer that these things are poison and all the rest of it. He's somehow persuaded himself of all of this. But every time he's caught out, like Cassie Hunt was doing an interview with him, and she said, "You said that there's no safe and effective vaccine." He says, "I never said that." And then she said, "Play the clip," right? And she plays the clip. So taking a leaf from her book, I just will play a short clip for our viewers, because several times during the hearing, Kennedy said, "I never said that. I never said that. I'm not anti-vaccine." And so I would just like to put this on the record. So guys, let's play this.
"And I will tell you this, that every child is damaged. 54%, those are the kids who made insurance claims. What about the kids who lost IQ? 1 or 2 points. Who are depressed? Who are not functioning? Who can't? Who are socially awkward? All of these injuries that are invisible from the vaccines. And we know, you know, if you've ever compared an unvaccinated kid to a vaccinated kid, you see the bright eyes and the engagement and the social interactions and the curiosity and the affection and you compare them. A child even had 1 or 2 vaccines and they're completely different. And those injuries don't get measured. They're just a blight on this, and they poisoned an entire generation of American children."
So there you go. Unbelievable. That is what he really thinks. He also thinks he has the magical power to recognize mitochondrial damage on a child's face that he passes in the airport. I don't even know what that is. I mean, some sort of genetic disorder. I don't know. But he's such a lunatic.
You know, I'm so glad you played that. You know, I thought the hearing for him today went poorly. And whatever, I'm always a terrible judge at how these things are going to play in politics, but it felt like it played poorly.
Yeah.
And I thought the Democrats mostly and some of the Republicans who were trying to criticize him did an effective job. The one thing I wished, and you were just talking about this, is he does this thing where you confront him with what he said. And he says, "You're a liar. I never said that." And even, you know, it's jarring because you're thinking, "Wait, am I the crazy one? I know you said that thing." I think the rules in the Senate and the House, you can't play a video. You can't have there's rules of props and things, but there's nothing preventing them from having a piece of paper in front of them and just reading the quote. I wish more of them said, "You didn't say this. Well, here's what you said on XXXX.
Yes.
And you can then say, "I was whatever." So number one, I'm glad you said that for that. The other thing I'm glad you did was that quote, which I then remembered as it went through. But again, he said so many things. Who can keep track of all
that? True.
But this idea that you can see in a child's eyes, and very similar to what he was saying the other day about mitochondria, which is a thing. I mean, there's a whole like part of his world that's convinced that there's a connection to mitochondria. You know, and like everything else he does, there's like 10% truth in there, and then it's sort of twisted to his agenda. But just think about what he's saying there. He's saying that, look, I, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., by staring at your child, can tell if they were vaccinated. And whatever else is out there, the decades of studies and, you know, the 99% of the scientists in the world and everything we see with our own eyes, by the fact that we used to have kids die all the time from polio and measles and whooping cough, go down the list.
Or be deaf. There were a lot of kids who lost their hearing through measles. You know, I mean, that was a known thing. It's like, that kid, he had measles, he's deaf.
Yeah. and all of that, don't trust any of that, because I, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the all-knowing, all-seeing wizard of child health, I guess, can stare at the child's eyes and tell that, oh, you are vaccinated. I mean, it's, you know, it's just not credible in any way. And I wish more people could just sort of hear him talk like that, because to me, at least, I hear that. I think, okay, I don't trust you. I mean, that's just so obviously not a kind of a credible way to speak about something involving medicine and science. And if you went there and you took your kid to a pediatrician and they said they didn't take any tests and they whatever, they said, oh, I can just look at you and tell, you know, I'd be like, uh-huh, thank you. I'll see you later. I'm gonna go down the street. Yes.
Exactly. And you know, I was just posting a few things online after the hearing and just saying, you know, people have been highly critical of RFK Jr., which is great and necessary, but don't forget that Donald Trump made the decision to put this nutcase in charge of your health and your kids' health. And I think part of the reason he did it is that it, again, everything is a matter of vanity for Trump. And the idea of a Kennedy reporting to him was just very irresistible. It's like his mindset is still sort of stuck in about 1970. And so, you know, Time magazine's cover still looms very large for Trump, you know, or a 60 Minutes interview, thus the whole controversy over, you know, the so-called editing by CBS of that interview with Kamala Harris. Those things seem very important to him. And I think the idea of having a Kennedy who has to call him sir was the thing that probably tipped him over. But that's speculation on my part. I don't know. So, okay. And then there's one other thing that he did, just like, well, two more that we should just talk about. One is the comment that he made about, there's another one of his nutty ideas, that SSRIs are responsible for school shootings. And it's like the kind of thing that your crazy aunt might think. But she would say, but I did research online and I did my own research and I found out that SSRIs cause school shootings. And you'd say, okay, Aunt Lil, you know, that's just not credible. But this is RFK Jr. This was another thing, by the way, that he was confronted about at the hearing and claimed he never said.
He did say it. I don't remember the exact quote, but I think what he did was he said, he was asked about what he might be causing this. And he said, well, there's been this increase and we're going to look at SSRIs in a way that very clearly implied that's where he was going with this.
And he has said it in the past.
And he has, I was going to say yes. And then he has said it in the past much more clearly. You know, you can see the wheels going in his head sometimes, like, wait, I can't say that exactly. Yeah. So I need to calibrate that a little more carefully. And, you know, I feel like this is a good example of what's so frustrating is, you know, science is, you know, almost anything in science is 99%. There's always a 1% chance of things. And I for one, think it's always worth looking at the 1%. You know, if he said, you know what, we should do a wide ranging, you know, study of what's going on and the effects of SSRIs. You know, SSRIs are, you know, that part of healthcare. It is a little, you know, that there's, you know, you can ask questions. I don't mind honestly saying, let's have a blue ribbon commission and let's do some more studies. Let's have NIH do more studies on this and look, you know, we'll see what happens, you know. But that's one thing to kind of say, I'm open to new points of view, bringing in a person now and then who's going to sort of look at the box from the other side or whatever.
Sure.
Great. Wonderful. Let's do that. That's good science. But that's not what he's talking about, right?
No.
And you can see he's not. He's got his ideas. He's got his fixed, you know, he knows, he's already figured it out because he's Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the all-knowing, all-seeing. He knows what the answer is. And he might have a study. You know, he'll go up and say, I just want to follow the science. He might appoint whatever. But we all know what he's doing is he's picking the researchers. He's picking the agenda because he's picking the agenda and the researchers who he knows will arrive at the conclusion that he has already determined is correct. And that is the exact opposite of what science is supposed to be.
Exact opposite. It's conclusion first. And that's what he's doing with the MMR vaccine and the so-called link to autism, which has been studied to death. And, you know, fine if you want to study it some more. if you're doing it, as you say, Jonathan, in an open-minded and fair way, you know, you might say that's kind of a waste of money since there have been, you know, something like 80 studies or whatever it is that have all found no link. But okay, maybe you want to do one more. Okay. But no, he is, as you say, he's cherry picking the people who are going to do the study, who he knows are going to come to the conclusion he wants to reach and has already come to himself, which is the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine is causing autism. And perhaps sometime this month, they're going to come out with a report and it's going to have a government imprimatur on it saying there's a link. And God knows how many people, and it's not their fault because, you know, they're unsophisticated and they're, you know, they're kind of right to want to trust people in authority, but they're going to hesitate to inoculate their kids and we're going to have more measles outbreaks. Meanwhile, in Florida, you're not going to.
In Florida, you always get nervous. I grew up
in Florida. I know, Florida, man.
In Florida, right? I'm like, uh-oh. What's coming after that phrase?
Can you just speculate for me about what might happen in Florida if. So now they're saying there are going to be no more mandates of any kind. So to go to a school in Florida, you're not going to need to have the polio vaccine or any of the others, whooping cough, all these deadly and horrifying illnesses. The immunization rate was already plunging in Florida. I think it's down in the 70s now. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think they're going to start getting real outbreaks there? And, you know, what is that going to do to Disney? What is that going to do to the state's economy if people are afraid to go there?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, our colleague Andrew Egger wrote about that this morning, and I started following some links, and I can't remember the exact numbers, 70s might be correct, but they were low. I was surprised how low they had gotten.
Yeah.
And kids are opting, you know, like most states, Florida has allows exceptions. Some states make it easier to get the exceptions than others. Florida is among those, I believe, that has made it easy to get an exception. So even though they
until
have the
now,
mandates,
now there's not going to be any mandate at all. So you don't need an exception.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's, I think, it's, you know, the machinations of Florida process are not entirely clear. And if the surge of the second, if they need the legislature to go along, but of course it's the Florida Republican legislature that is, you know, DeSantis, who knows, DeSantis is 100% along, you know, on board with this. So who knows? It certainly seems possible that's where they'll go. And yeah, I do know what it's going to look like because we just saw it in Texas, right? I mean, we are just coming off an outbreak in Texas, hundreds of measles cases. Two deaths, first two child deaths from, and as you were saying before, sometimes I think we get caught up on the number of deaths. And if you look at a lot of these outbreaks, we don't get deaths, but like people, they get very sick. They get conditions forever. Measles, you know, you can get this sort of, what's called immunity, the word, amnesia, where basically, you know, immune system.
Is so crazy. Explain that.
So I'm going to be, I don't want to get over my skis here because I am not a doctor. But my understanding of it is that you're basically, your immune system basically forgets, that's what the word amnesia there is for, how to fight certain things it already knew how to fight. So you become susceptible to other infections.
After you've had measles.
After you've had measles, you can get some long-term debilitating effects, neurological effects. And measles is a really bad disease. I mean, there's a reason we give shots for it. So you're going to see more people getting the measles. You're going to see more people getting these diseases that, you know, you'd hate, you hopefully polio doesn't come back, but the polio still exists in the world. It could come back. Whooping cough, certainly. Whooping cough, you know, the immunity we have from whooping cough, it wanes over time from the shots. People do get whooping cough, you know, so all these things are in circulation. People are going to get sick. And I do think it's really important to remember, you know, if you listen to the press conference in Florida, from the Surgeon General, whose name I always mispronounce, I think it's Lapato.
I don't know how to pronounce it either.
I don't either, but the Surgeon General and Governor DeSantis, you know, they very much framed this as a freedom thing. You know, you should be free to decide what risk your child has. Well, yeah, to some extent, sure. But when you send your kid to school, you're exposing other people.
Correct.
And vaccines are not perfect. You can still get measles or whooping cough, even if you are vaccinated. So you are exposing other people. You're exposing teachers. Vaccination for a lot of these children's diseases, it takes a few years before you really are fully immunized, and very, very young babies may not have them. So if you bring something home and you have, you know, a kid, you have a younger sibling who's 2-3 months old, you can transmit the disease. And then, of course, there are people who are immunocompromised, people who have chemotherapy, you know, getting chemotherapy, whatever, they're going to be exposed. And as you said, what does that mean? You know, are you going to want to, you know, there's an economic impact to this for sure. I mean, are you going to want to visit Disney World? There was a very famous Disneyland, California Disneyland outbreak about 10 years ago from started with an unvaccinated child. You know, are people, you know, there's an economic impact on Florida, but of course, and then there's, you know, there's the human impact. Just more people are going to get sick. More people are going to be left exposed to other diseases. They're going to have long-standing complications, whether it's hearing, whether it's neurological damage, and some people are going to die. And that's what we're talking about here.
You know, I hate seeing this corruption of the freedom idea in the name of things that are frankly antisocial. I mean, you know, the old libertarian line used to be that, you know, my freedom extends as far as I can swing my fist, but it ends at your nose, right? I mean, so the thing is, when you choose not to vaccinate yourself or your child, it isn't just affecting you. This is something you have to do as a collective to shield people who can't shield themselves, like babies who you can't get a vaccine against measles, I think, until 6 months, and then it's not fully effective, and you get several rounds. And so, you know, I mean, I have a grandchild coming.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled. But anyway, I have a grandchild coming, and that baby will not be able to be vaccinated and is vulnerable to any jerk who decided that, you know, in the name of their freedom, they didn't want to be immunized. And it's really, really worrying if this becomes widespread. And I talked to somebody who said, you know, before Trump was even in office, but just sort of like spinning out, well, what are the terrible things that could happen? And when I mentioned this, you know, he said, well, okay, so a few people will die and then they'll change it. You know, and I thought, well, that's pretty cavalier. But in any event, it's not just, I mean, we'll see. These people, I'm not sure that even a few people dying. Look, two people died in Texas. Nothing has changed. You know, I mean, okay. I'm going to take a deep breath and quote Otto von Bismarck, who said, "Only a fool learns from his own mistakes. The wise man learns from the mistakes of others." Which is something that I think we should all bear in mind when we think about toying with, you know, these protections that we've taken for granted. A couple times in your writing, you've said, you know, well, it's been a really long time since we've seen the outbreak of one of these infectious agents. And so COVID-19 aside, but like the childhood ones. And so people have gotten very complacent. I'd like to turn now to something else you've written about, which is very important because, you know, the Secretary of Health and Human Services has the power to do a number of things with the stroke of a pen where there is no check on his authority. And so you wrote a very important piece about how he can destroy our very delicate system for making sure that vaccines are available through changing some of these rules. So talk about the whole liability issue.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's sort of easiest way to understand is to tell the story of how we got this liability system, which goes back to the 1980s. For a variety of reasons, the pertussis vaccine, whooping cough vaccine, there had been a new awareness of some of the complications, and there was a lot of fear that it was causing severe complications, even death. Subsequent research has cast a lot of doubt on that, that it, the most severe side effects of the pertussis vaccine probably didn't exist. But, you know, like any vaccine, we were talking about this before, there are definitely side effects. There are definitely some people, very rarely, who are going to have more serious complications. At the time, what would happen was people were getting the vaccine. Bad things were happening to them. They were going into court. They were filing a lawsuit. It was easy to win those lawsuits. You had a very sympathetic plaintiff. You had a big bad drug company. And there were these very large judgments against the drug companies. And the drug companies who manufactured the vaccine started saying, this isn't worth it to us anymore. We don't make that much money on vaccines in the first place. And if we're going to be facing these huge liability costs, which they said, and I don't know if this was true or not, but they said some of their vaccines were actually becoming unprofitable to make because of the liability exposure they had, they stopped making them. And we actually had a shortage of pertussis vaccines.
And can I interrupt real quick just to point out that I'm sympathetic to the drug companies on this matter, because it's the kind of medicine that you only take once or maybe twice, a vaccine, as opposed to something like, you know, a penicillin or you know, Viagra or something that people take for years and years and years and keep buying and keep putting money in the pockets of the manufacturer. With a vaccine, that's not true. So I do believe that it, you know, the costs are high to develop it, and then you don't get that much of a profit because it's a one and done.
For sure. For sure. You know, I mean, this is just, they could certainly make more money in other places. I mean, there's lots of opportunities in the drug and the pharmaceutical industry to make really big money. And either they were not making a lot or they were losing money. I mean, they very quite possibly were losing money. So 100%. So they went and said, we're pulling out, and we were down to basically one manufacturer of pertussis vaccines. And they basically went to Washington and said, you got to help us or we're not going to continue to make them. Now, the parents groups were like, well, don't let them off the hook completely. Some of us are really, we need compensation if there are injuries. The pediatricians, the public health experts were like, please do something. We want to guarantee the supply. So the deal that they came up with was basically a no-fault system, which, if you're familiar from the world of car insurance, for example, it basically says, look, we're going to create a system where if you have an injury and it could plausibly be linked to a vaccine, we're not going to go through the whole litigation and the trial to sort of say, you know, and try to prove it or disprove it, which, you know, frankly, isn't good for you, the injured party, because it's going to take a long time. And whether you get the money or not, it's going to depend on how sympathetic you are, what kind of jury you get, and maybe if you get a good lawyer. So instead, we're going to expedite the process. You're going to get a payment based on a formula. There'll be a special master who will kind of look through this and, you know, set an award. It'll be much quicker. You'll get money. You, the drug industry, you don't have to face these liability
suits.
This liability fare anymore. Yes, suits. Thank you. Couldn't think of the word. Liability suits anymore. People can still sue the drug companies if they want, but it's gonna be much harder to do at this point. It's not going to happen very much. And the drug companies, they said, you're going to have to pay for every vaccine. You pay a little bit of a money into this trust fund that will then cover the payments going out. So we're not letting you off the hook.
Wasn't
taxpayer money, and we're not letting you off the hook. We're not, you know, you're still subject to a liability. If you do if you're truly negligent, you can still get called on that. But in the meantime, you're paying money into this fund. And meanwhile, now the drug companies say, okay, we feel secure that we can see that, you know, we can make a solid profit on this going forward. We will continue to make vaccines. And, you know, since then we've had a relatively stable supply. So that is the system in place today. There's a parallel system that covers emergency drugs like for COVID that's also in place. Kennedy has hinted, and he's sort of said in not quite so many words that he's going to do something about this system. And it could take a number of different forms. He could remove shots. He could say this shot is no longer covered.
Just on his own say so.
So it depends on the drug, on the shot. For most shots, he could do it on his say. So it would require a regulatory change, which, you know, for our listeners and viewers know, that means there's a process. You have to propose the rule. There's comments, but he can probably make it happen. Just take a little time. It would take probably at least a few months. For COVID shots specifically, because they're in this parallel system, that's not done by regulation. That's literally the stroke of the pen. So he could decide tomorrow, sign a piece of paper and it's done, and COVID would lose that liability protection. And you can imagine, given all the sort of fears out there, which he has stoked, you can imagine instantly companies like Moderna and Pfizer saying, we're done. We don't want to do this anymore. Now, we don't know that that will happen, but there's a good chance, and there's a good chance you go back to the kind of shortages we had before. So that's the situation there. What's frustrating to me about this is if you talk to people who set up that system, they will tell you it doesn't work that well. I mean, there are real problems. I mean, if Kennedy wanted to come in and say, this system isn't working as well as it could, it doesn't pay out the money quickly enough, it's, you know, the Justice Department is contesting too many cases, which are things you'll hear from vaccine enthusiasts, the people who wrote the bill. Great. I mean, there was an opportunity here for him to come in and do a sensible reform. And instead, he's just going to, you know, it looks like he's going to try to blow up the system. And I feel like that's true for almost everything he touches. Whereas, you know, none of these agents, you know, CDC, not perfect, needs reform, you know, lots, NIH could use a restructuring. We could go down the list of every part of the health bureaucracy in this country and say, this could be better, that could be better. And sometimes it needs more than tinkering, it needs pretty big shakeup. And he could do that, but instead he is blowing it all up for his anti-vaccine agenda. And we're going to be worse off before it. Sorry, that's my little soapbox. But
no, you're, that's why I invited you here. I want you to have a soapbox. Mona's soapbox, right for you, Jonathan. Okay, so one more thing about this. Kennedy doesn't have clean hands. He's not, I mean, it isn't just that he's a nut, which he is, but it's also that he made his living suing the pharmaceutical companies, and he still has an arrangement with a law firm where when he's, well, you explain it. When he sues, when they sue, he gets a referral fee. And he gets 10% of any recovery against the pharmaceutical firms, right? Or something like that. I don't know exactly what the proportions are.
I will say this is one of those words. I don't know about you, but like my to-do list of things to really do a deep dive on is so long, and it keeps getting bigger because there's so much going on. But my rough, let me just say this in case I get the detail wrong here. My rough understanding of this is that when he was in confirmation hearings, that he was part of a law firm that was involved in lawsuits. I believe what he said was something along the lines of, I will not take any money while I'm secretary. But his son, I think, or he's a nephew, or there's a relative who's still at the firm, who still does get the money from it. And potentially after he leaves office, he could go back to it. So he's got a financial interest. And that's to say nothing of a lot of the people he's appointed in these positions have their own. You know, they've been paid witnesses, or they are paid witnesses in lawsuits challenging vaccine safety. So, yeah, you know, this was one of the more memorable moments of the hearings today, where he and Bernie Sanders really got into it about this. And Senator Bernie Sanders was like, your hands are not clean at all here. And but, you know, in Kennedy's mind, as Sanders said, everyone is corrupt except him. Yeah. He is not corrupt. Everyone else is corrupt, but not him.
Yeah, I never liked Bernie Sanders, but boy, I liked him today.
He's making a lot of new friends today.
Yeah, lots of new friends, because he made the right point. Well, he made a very good point, which is that Kennedy is one of those zealots, you know, who just defines disagreement as being an enemy. And if you disagree with him, or if you have a different view, then you are corrupt by definition. And that's very Trumpy, by the way. I mean, Trump is the same way. It's just that's his only way of judging people. Not are they good humans who do, you know, walk little old ladies across the street. No, his only concern is, do they say nice things about me? If so, it doesn't matter if they shoot little old ladies in the street. They're okay with him. That's the only criterion. In the last few days, there have been something like 1,000 current and former employees of CDC who have called for Kennedy's resignation and so on. I know you're the policy guy and you're not the politics guy so much, but how bad was it today for RFK Jr.? I mean, do you think it's now there's going to be pressure on Trump to really consider axing him?
Yeah, boy, I wish I knew the answer to that. I'll, you know, on the one hand, I feel like the political environment, like I feel like between everything that's happened at CDC recently, between this Florida development we were just talking about, you get the, I feel like he's been pushing so hard, faster than I thought. I thought he was going to go slow and subtle. And in fact, he's just bowled ahead, very Trumpy, yeah. as you say.
Yeah.
He's going to push his agenda as fast and as, he's not really hiding it.
No.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, but not much. And I felt like maybe we're like at a little one of those moments between the resignations and the fact that you saw Republicans asking questions and turning against him. Maybe there's a sort of a critical mass there enough to sort of change the political. So part of me thinks, yeah, that could really make a difference. I do think we're still in the audience of one. It's all about what Trump wants. And it's about the, as you were just saying, it's all about what is useful to Trump. And I think you're right about it. He likes the Kennedy. He's right. You know, he's a Kennedy that makes a difference to him. And I think on a more practical level, he likes the Kennedy voters, you know, being on his side.
You know, it's worth remembering, as we've seen so many institutions bowing and scraping before Trump, it's important to remember that in the interregnum, after the election and before the inauguration, Trump floated Matt Gaetz. Thank you. He floated Matt Gaetz for attorney general. And guess what? There was genuine pushback from Republicans in the Senate. And so Trump withdrew it. Now, he put in somebody almost as bad. But it's important to remember that when he gets pushback, which is so rare, but when he gets it, it works. And today, very unusually, I would say, for the Trump 2.0 administration, to see Republicans, even though they're trying to finesse it and even though they're tiptoeing around it, but they were still very critical of Kennedy. I think that might be more pressure than Trump is comfortable with, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. And just listening to you talk about it and remembering Matt Gaetz, who I'd forgotten about, which is like, it was not that many months ago, but there's so much.
So much has happened.
And I'm thinking about all the other cabinet members who have caused problems. Pete Hegseth. I mean, we just sort of go down the list. You know, Kennedy, it hadn't occurred to me until you were just saying that. The one thing that's different about Kennedy is he's got his own, I don't think there's anyone else in the cabinet like this. He's got his own agenda and his own kind of small power base that overlap significantly and work in Trump's favors, but they're not entirely together and not entirely the same. And I do think that, you know, it's not that hard to imagine a world where either Trump or people who are very close to him, the Susie Wiles of the world, you know, Stephen Millers, decide this guy is operating on his own, doing his own thing for that he wants to do, that is not necessarily serving our purposes. And that it's not that hard to imagine that there being a rupture over that. So maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. And there's one other person to bear in mind in this context, Elon Musk. Same thing, right? You know, yeah, kind of,
right?
Well, he's not completely under our control. So we'll see. All right. On that happy note. Possible sliver of hope. Thank you so much for joining me. And I recommend to everyone your wonderful pieces that they can find in the Bulwark.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show. This was so exciting. I hope I get to come back on again.
You bet.